Welcome to another episode of Harvest Series, a podcast following a four-day experience in Kaplankaya on the southwestern Aegean coast of Turkey, filled with fascinating talks and workshops to harvest knowledge and nurture the planet. An event produced by Athena Advisors and Capital Partners.
The way culture is today, we still live in a patriarchy, but it still creates all these characters for both men and women. So the more women are free, the more men can also become free, you know, not following all these roles that they're also kind of following, and the separation, the violence, the, you know, the competitiveness and everything else. At the end, the way things are today is actually not healthy for anyone. So Free Free has this mission of really taking this awareness to as many people as possible in the world so that people can understand what that means. That's the first step, because people don't even understand that. And then we do educational programs, impact projects to actually, you know, make that transformation deeper.
I'm Rose, a French journalist based in Barcelona. In this episode, recorded in Kaplankaya, I sit down with Yasmin McDougall-Steria. With 11 years as editor and creative director at Vogue, collaborating with icons like Rihanna and Naomi Campbell, Yasmin now leads Free Free, an organization dedicated to empowering girls and women emotionally, physically, and financially. Join us as we delve into the roles we play in life, the societal pressure we face, and the pursuit of true freedom in a world fixated on perfection for women and men.
Hello, Yasmin.
Hello, how are you?
Very well. And you?
Very well as well.
Good to see you in London for a special one-day edition of Harvest in London.
Yeah, it's very exciting to be here. It's a special place for me.
Yeah, because you've lived in London.
I've lived in London. My mother was English and my daughter was born here. So, yeah.
Yeah, good memories.
Good memories, yeah.
Because you're talking about your mother and your daughter, we're going to ask you the first question. Can you define freedom for girls and women?
So freedom is our ability to be who we truly are, is to be present in the moment, in our most authentic self. We normally think of freedom as, you know, like being free to do whatever we want and go to parties. That's how, sometimes how people relate to it. But really, freedom is our ability to stay authentic to our true selves. And for girls and women, that's not normally the case. You know, we're born into culture and society and religion restrictions that makes women always feel that they need to please others, that they need to fit in a box, like, you know, to be liked, to be accepted, to be loved, or even to be honored, right? So because women have always been in this position, and I'm saying this millions of years, it's very hard for us to understand who we are apart of everything else, you know, besides, you know, all these rules that we grow up learning how to be. Freedom for me is when we are able to let go of this myth of the perfect woman.
Self-judging.
Self-judging, shame, guilt, and just be our most creative being.
What inspired you to start Free Free? Is it because you noticed you were not free yourself, or that women around you were not free? What inspired you?
So Free Free started from a very, very intimate part of my life. It was basically when I got pregnant of my daughter. I was 28 years old at the time. And I lost my mother. She took her own life when I was 21. Oh, okay. So exactly 7 years before, which is incredible, like a cycle. I was pregnant of a girl, and at the time, I didn't really understand, you know, what happened with my mother. So all the pain started coming up in that moment when I got pregnant, and I had to kind of look into it. Because when it happened at age 21, what I did was basically change my whole life. I was doing law. I'm from Rio. And, you know, people think of Rio as a very fun and people festive. Are naked. Yeah. You know, like, but really, Rio can be very conservative and traditional as well. So in a very religious place. So at the time I decided to move to London, where my mother is from, I started my career in fashion, and that's when I started working for Vogue, and I did my master's, and I kind of started kind of just being more myself, you know, like, you know, living in a new city and just being a bit more free. But I wasn't exactly free because I was just kind of following what I thought would make me happy. You know, I didn't really look into my pain and my trauma. When that happened, it really helped my career to grow. I was an editor at age 24, you know, doing the covers and stuff like that. I was very young before social media. So I used all my, I wouldn't say pain, but, you know, almost like I was hiding.
Okay.
Right, doing that work. So when my
keeping
mother...
Keeping busy
and traveling and doing this and that. But when I got pregnant, it gave me, not the time, but it just like, it was this thing that I... The pain just started coming up. It's like, you know, I opened a door. So I started studying all of it. And I started doing, like, taking my spiritual path very seriously. And it kind of awakened me to another aspect of my life. And I started questioning, what is this? You know, what am I feeling? Why was I following all these rules? What happened to my mother? And I realized that my mother was actually living the myth of perfection. And this is what actually made her go to an extreme. And I noticed that I didn't want to repeat that pattern or even pass it on to my daughter. And I wanted to support other women in that sense so that they could use their voice, be who they truly are, instead of suffocating themselves with all these things that we need to be. And we're never enough, you know, and that creates this depressing of emotions that can become so many different things.
How long was the process for you? Thank you first for sharing this story, this beautiful story. And how long did it take you? How long was the process to heal yourself and fix things in a way?
I think we're always healing, you know. I don't think there's an end to that, but I think for me, the process, I don't know how long, but it took me a few years until, you know, going very deep on my, you know, emotional health, my spirituality, a lot of meditation. I started studying psychodrama, Jung, and, you know, just everything else. And what happened was I really started questioning my work because I said, how can I use the work that I do? And, you know, I had a big career in fashion to create something for women and girls. Because fashion is very, people love it, you know, and it's attractive. People just, you know, how can I use it in a way that instead of putting more women into box, we can actually support them to find their own truth and be free. So that's when I started having the idea for Free Free. So as I healed, this methodology that we created and that I created, but also like, everything else started just coming into place and I started manifesting it. And the more I do the work, the more I heal myself as well. As you know, it's a collective healing.
How do you feel now that you're free of this myth of perfection? Freer.
So free. Good. I think it's the most amazing thing to feel. You know, once we start taking off the layers of what we think we need to be, and we start being more authentic, we're not so worried about what other people think because we know who we are. You know, we're not living for others, we're living for ourselves. So we go through a very big transformation in that sense because the people around us change. Sometimes the people that we used to go out with or are part of our lives, they don't relate to us anymore because we're all of a sudden we're just being who we are. And then a lot changes in the process. We have to be very courageous as well, because in order to get into this state, we also need to have the courage to look into our deepest pain. And that is sometimes looking through abusive situations or traumas that we didn't even know we had. And then the more we do that, the more we free ourselves and the more authentic we become. And this kind of reflects and mirrors to our environment and back. So it's a very beautiful process.
Was it painful, though?
It is painful, yeah. I think going through an awakening process in general, it is painful because you really need to look in the mirror and see what's still, like, what you actually pushed inside of you to kind of fit in to cultural expectations in general and religion and ancestral trauma. There's so much stuff, right, that we're like putting one thing on top of the other. And it is painful sometimes to look into that. So you have to have courage, but then you have to understand that that state will come up, it will go, and then you're freer every time that happens.
Yeah. Do you regard this as a gift to your daughter?
Oh, totally. Yes, it's my gift to her. And I always say she's the free girl. You know, she's my biggest teacher, my biggest inspiration. She's Violeta, my daughter, she's very free. You know, I try to bring her up having all these values in the sense that I'm not conditioning her with all this from culture and religion and society and da-da-da. But just for her to be playing around and enjoying herself and just connecting with nature. And also I take her around, you know, when I'm traveling, she comes with me. So, you know, she's so excited about Free Free. It's so cute. It's like, she's almost like the ambassador.
That's good. Yeah, is in a way. She's the beginning of everything.
Yeah.
For you. What are the things that, if you want to share, that you used to do because you thought like society wanted you to do? Mm-hmm. And do you have concrete example and that you are not going to do anymore?
Oh, lots of things. When I was growing up, I was in a very conservative, as a teenager, I was in a very conservative relationship, right? So that the expectations was, you know, you take care of the home and my partner would work.
Okay.
And I was always someone that always worked. So you can see from, you know, I was working since 21 and I, you know, my work was always a big part of my life. And things like, you know, I would silence myself because sometimes, you know, sometimes you can't really say stuff. It's not very, you know, or you can't do this or you can't do that.
You want to pretend you're capable. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. You have to pretend all the time. But the more you pretend, this is something that I don't do anymore. This is definitely something that before, you know, to be the good girl, the perfect girl, you know, I was, you know, growing up, my family was very chaotic. So I thought I had to be the perfect girl, right? Since I was a kid. So I would be the best ballerina. I did ballet my whole life. I had great grades at school. I didn't take drugs. I didn't, you know, experiment at all. I was just like always super proper because I didn't want to cause more, you know, like trouble. I got the responsibility and I was very shy as well growing up. So for me, in a way, I can't even think of myself like that anymore, but it was a way, it was a survival mode, if that makes any sense. Our environment, when we're growing up, kind of creates, you know, in order to survive, you just create a character to survive. And then once you go through the process of taking off the layers, undressing yourself from all of that, and then you start discovering who you are. So things like accepting a relationship that isn't very healthy or that, you know, there is some sort of is too controlling or too manipulative or, you know, someone taking your power away, your creativity away. I could never be in that situation again. Or just trying to be perfect all the time, you know, not accepting failure. But it's not easy, you know. We do criticize ourselves a lot as women, you know. We're always questioning, are we a good mother? Are we doing this, you know, are we a good partner? Are we, you know, it's...
Of course, yeah. And what do you do now that you would never have done, allowed yourself to do before?
I allow myself to be creative, to speak up whenever I need, to be compassionate in the sense that I understand someone else's pain without judgment, but I also don't silence myself if I see an injustice. And before I would be afraid. You know, sometimes you're afraid to just say something, to give your opinion.
Exposed. Yeah, to, yeah,
to be exposed. Right? Yeah. To be exposed. So I think today what I do is just really try to be as authentic as I can, even if that means not following all these rules.
Did you have to break with, because you mentioned you were you had a conservative background. Did you have to break with some people from your past?
Yeah, I was brought up in a very Catholic, family and group society, let's say. So religion was a big thing in my life in that sense. But I have nothing against religion in that sense. Everyone can be whoever they want to be. I think that's the essence of the work I do. But in that way, in my past, I think the way women are portrayed in general, it's very much as submissive and right. And there's no right or wrong. I think people do need to follow their truth. But I did have to break with not people, but, just the reality changed so much. So it's almost like to discover who I am, I had to just be who I am. And the people that perhaps weren't part of that transformation just naturally are not part of my life anymore. That's part of it. It's hard, but it's part of it.
Can you tell me more about Free Free now and explain what it is, how it started, and who's it's intended for?
So Free Free is a movement, is an ecosystem of change that has the mission of taking physical, emotional, and financial freedom to girls and women, but also acknowledging boys and men. Because, of course, the freedom of girls and women means the freedom of boys and men as well. How? Because the way culture is today, we still live in a patriarchy, but it still creates all these characters for both men and women. So the more women are free, the more men can also become free, not following all these roles that they're also kind of following, and the separation, the violence, the competitiveness and everything else. At the end, the way things are today is actually not healthy for anyone. So Free Free has this mission of really taking this awareness to as many people as possible in the world so that people can understand what that means. That's the first step, because people don't even understand that. And then we do educational programs, impact projects to actually, make that transformation deeper, and also support vulnerable communities to also experience that as well. So we have all these different aspects of our work.
You make it through fashion. So sometimes we see a bit fashion as a freedom, because you have all this way, like the women should be like very thin, very tall, a bit like an object sometimes. Mm-hmm. So how did you reconcile the two?
So one of the methodologies we use has fashion. Not everything does. We try with Free Free, the way we present ourselves is really colorful. We have that, bring that fashion element in the sense of how we communicate with others, because it's just inspired, it's fun. That's what people relate to. If it's too just deep and difficult, people are just, they just tend to run away.
Yeah. Okay.
So we use fashion in that sense.
To be light and joyful.
Right? And to be colorful and to bring a bit of this aspect of creativity to it, right? So it's not too dense. Yes. I think that's the word. But what we do specifically with the fashion methodology, which is very interesting, is because all of us, we need to dress up in any culture, even in tribes, everywhere. We like to ornament ourselves and to kind of express ourselves through, we can call it clothes, but we could do it with whatever we want. So the interesting thing is that they become, whatever we're wearing, become symbols of traumas or what we want to hide. So we just, what do we want to undress ourselves from symbolically? And not, sometimes the way we show ourselves to the world is actually just a facade, So how do we take that off and show our true self? That's just a way of looking into it. But our programs can go much deeper than that. Yeah.
Okay. You've been to Harvard recently. Can you tell us what you've been doing there for Free Free?
Now we started a project for Free Free called the Free Free Club that we're taking it to universities, and we launched it at Harvard, where the students are invited to create a Free Free chapter at the university. And, you know, they go through the educational program that we put together. I created this program with a Harvard professor called Dr. Joan Johnson Fries. And basically what we do is that the students have access to all of this, and we support them in creating an impact project anywhere they want. So what I went to do at Harvard right now is that we do have a Free Free Club there, where the students are creating a project in Africa that we're going to be launching in January. So it's basically they're kind of just multiplying Free Free in different communities.
As you endeavor to liberate women globally, it's evident that both women and men hold varied limiting beliefs across different regions. How do you navigate and address these diverse cultural and societal perspectives?
So every culture is, of course, you know, every country has a different culture, a different religion, a different reality. But at the end, like in the core, the pain is the same. It's this suppression of our true self. It's the abuses of the everyday life, of the silencing, the manipulation, you know, all the pretending. Like we, all of us in general, like in most parts of the world, we do in smaller or bigger levels, we do experience some level of abuse. So that's what connects us. And this is how Free Free supports both women and men, because, you know, violence is so normalized in the world as the main form of resolving conflict. People don't talk, they don't express, they use violence, violent behaviors. And I'm not saying that people are hitting each other, but you know, in some places they are. Mm-hmm. But it can be a violent way of speaking or acting or doing stuff. And this is how normally people express themselves, because of their lack of emotional abilities to do that, you know? Yeah. Both men and women. Yeah. So because of that, we do have a society that's quite ill in that sense, where everyone is really suffering from that and traumatized in general. So when we understand that violence creates violence, and the more we free ourselves from all these behaviors, we're actually happier. We're, you know, and this goes far along. It impacts not only us in a personal level, but it also impacts countries. It impacts how, you know, if a country is prosperous or if it's poor, you know, if it's secure, if it's stable, if, you know, if, so it impacts in a very big way.
How would you say, can you tell me more about this?
Of course. Yeah. So basically there's a theory called the first political order, which is a study created by a political scientist called Valerie Hudson. What she studies is basically that everything starts at the first political order. The first political order is the household level, right? So it's almost like our house, it's a little state. And the rules that we are used to at the house, so if is the house, is it at the home level, are we treating each other as equals, or are we exerting power over the other? Do both, you know, is the couple equal in terms of having access to their finances, or is someone, you know, exerting power over the other? Is there dominance? Is there manipulation? Is there corruption? So everything starts there. And then the kids, they learn that dynamic because it becomes normalized. It's almost like a boot camp. Yeah. That's what you see every day, right? So we go to society, and there's a study that shows that the more inequality there is at household levels, the more instability there is in the country, the more poverty there is, the more insecurity in the sense of violence there is. So it's a reflection of how we learn from the beginning of our, when we are born. So, and it affects everyone because it affects us in a personal level and a bigger, you know, in a bigger situation as well.
That's why the solution is educating people.
Educating, bringing awareness. People need to understand that they don't need to be violent in any way to have power. The whole thing is about power at the end of the day. So how can we understand that the true power is not having power over another, but it's inside of us being who we truly are?
What would you advise, like, for a woman in a, I'm sure you saw that, like a woman in a vulnerable community, victim of abuse, and financially, it's very difficult to escape more than a woman in a more prosperous country. What would you advise?
Both in vulnerable communities and in more prosperous communities, there is one thing that unites women, is that women sometimes are dependent financially on their husband. Depending on the culture, of course, there are women that can't even work in some countries. But being dependent financially is a huge problem, because it's almost like it's much harder to leave a situation. But, you know, sometimes in vulnerable communities, women have to work. So they do have that freedom, which is quite, you know, interesting. And what we see a lot, that in more prosperous communities, because in traditional marriages, sometimes women tend to, you know, decide to take care of their children, and, you know, they stop working, and all of a sudden, sometimes the marriage changes. So we see a lot of women in prosperous communities being stuck to marriages because...
being even more vulnerable, okay.
I wouldn't say more vulnerable, the situation in each community is can differ. But sometimes we think, you know, we have this image of the perfect family, but really the woman sometimes is really stuck and scared of, you know, what people will think about her. You know, if she leaves the marriage, what she will do, how will she live? But in vulnerable communities, of course, there is the poverty aspect that is very difficult. But once the woman reconnects to her strength and her creative power, she has the power of also starting a business and, you know, becoming an entrepreneur, which is a great option for women in many, many countries. But again, it really depends on where we're talking about, because in some countries, women can't even.
Yeah. So what's the process? It's like to find first self-confidence, and then the second key is to have a financial freedom.
Yeah. The first thing is to look in the mirror and understand the traumas, because the traumas make us repeat patterns, right? So, and then once you start understanding and accepting what you're going through, because a lot of people don't want to see it. We don't want to see that we're going through something difficult. We want to, you know, oh, maybe this is normal. Maybe this is how things are. Yeah. And the first thing is accepting it. Yeah. The second thing is rebuilding the self-confidence, because the more we silence ourselves, the more we allow ourselves to, you know, just to please others, we just lose ourselves in the way. We don't know who we truly are. Our identity is based on what people expect from us and not from what we are. So once we want to break free from that, we just feel lost. So it's also about understanding, what do I like? What don't I like? Is this nice? Or is this just something I do to please someone else or to please a group of friends? And then it's also finding that the way of being financially free. So what type of work can I do? How will I find that? Because in a society, you know, in the world that we live, we do need that aspect, those aspects together.
Do you teach men and boys also?
We do. We also teach boys and men, yes.
In today's discourse, there's an increasing mention of the masculine associated with action, and the feminine with compassion and kindness. There's a suggestion that men should embrace their masculine traits while women should embody more their feminine qualities. What are your thoughts on this narrative?
I think it's all about balance, right? I think there's a lot of healing both in the feminine and the masculine. So when the feminine is in their ego, the feminine tends to become victimized. And when we victimize ourselves, what happens is we lose our power. Of course, there is a lot of situations that we are victims. Like if you're talking about an extreme case of rape, I don't, you know, all these different things.
Reality,
but, reality. But there is a victim consciousness that sometimes becomes the, you know, that, oh, the, you know, that we sometimes just like don't act on. Because the real feminine energy is a vulnerable energy of love, of flexibility, of being courageous enough to share that love. But if we go into the victim energy, we just lose our power. So I think that's something that needs to balance. And when we talk of the masculine energy, when we are, when it's in the ego, where it's in the, you know, it still needs to be worked on, is the separation, is the war, is the, you know, is this tendency to create separation and war. So if we heal both these aspects, then we can move into the great part of the masculine, that is the power, the light, the knowledge with love. And then together, you have freedom. But this, both feminine and masculine, and both men and women, also has to be like balanced, because we have both energies in our bodies as well and our souls.
What would be the sentence or the advice you would have loved to hear when you were a little girl, shy and not very free to be yourself, and also trying to fit and to please people, to be perfect? What would you have loved? What would be the words that would have changed your life at the time?
The thing is, when we're kids, sometimes we don't have the autonomy we do have as adults, right? To defend ourselves or to be who we are. But I think the best advice would be to honor your truth. And your truth is your power, right? It's not acting and being what other people expect from you. As kids, sometimes that is very difficult, because we do need to adapt to our reality. But if you bring up kids in that way, in a healthier place, then they learn from the beginning that even the friendships they're doing, you know, some are healthier and some are not. And, you know, it's first accepting yourself, is even your imperfections. I think that would be my advice. And that everything's going to be okay.
I'm going to ask you the last question, one I'm asking to all the guests of Harvest. It's the harvest of the day. What's your favorite tool to actively transform our society or our planet or ourselves?
My favorite tool is just like breathing, dancing, and literally when you're doing that, you're freeing yourself. And then the more you do that, the more you can impact other people positively and change the world. But by changing yourself, that's how everything starts.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for your authenticity.
Thank you.
And for this nice interview.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you for tuning into this episode with Yasmin MacDougall-Steria. Her journey from personal loss to empowering women was truly inspiring for me. If you enjoyed the conversation, please consider leaving us a positive review and following us on Instagram at Harvest Series or my account rose.claverie. You can also catch our episode on youtube.com/harvestseries. Until next time.